This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Thursday, July the 29th, put together as ever by producer Shruti Rajendran, who is with me now. Hey, Shruti.
Hello.
So, Serena Kelly's up first with the latest COVID stories and others. Up next, we've got Kayleen Ting from Etihad Aviation Group.
Yes, a great story that Etihad is also going to trial the IATA Travel Pass, which is this all-stop app, which has all your COVID information. So when you're traveling, you don't have to worry about 30 million pieces of paper, you just have this one app.
We had a survey or a poll running today, didn't we, on our Instagram feed at Dubai 1038 FM, asking people, broadly speaking, are you in favour of these health or travel passports or not? Most are, not everyone, but most are in favour.
Yes, about 81% of our respondents said that they are in favour of this app, but about 13% said they won't.
We shall see what happens. Mortgages, talking mortgages with Ian Vaughan of Mortgage Finder. Perhaps no surprises, the property market's booming. Mortgage market's booming. And then I knew you'd put this one in the highlights. We've got a chef. Don't get a lot of chefs on the Business Breakfast, but Alexander Smalls is brilliant. Who's he and why do we care?
Absolutely. I think one of the best interviews we've had on air, if I can say that. He is the James Beard Award-winning chef. He's an author, but that's not all. He's won a Grammy and a Tony Award because he used to be an opera singer and he performed with the Houston Grand Opera. How do you go from chef to opera? I spend most of the morning actually looking him up. Fascinating story.
He's brilliant. And I tell you what, listen up, because a little bit later on, you'll hear Tom's introduction to him. We had people writing in saying not only did they love Chef Alexander Smalls, they love Tom's introduction to Chef Alexander Smalls. Tom and you had dug out some 1970s opera. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. He's coming to Expo 2020 Dubai, setting up an African food hall, and we are licking our lips at the prospect. First up, though, first order of business, here's Serena Kelly.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Serena.
Morning, guys.
Lots of questions coming in about the new Abu Dhabi green list. Just talking to the guys at Etihad Airways there about their new travel pass, people coming in and out of Abu Dhabi. It has changed. What's the deal?
8 countries have been added to Abu Dhabi's updated green list for travellers and 12 have been removed. So green list additions include Bahrain, Brunei, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Maldives, Poland, Serbia and the Ukraine. The places that have been removed, Azerbaijan, Denmark and France, Iceland, Jordan and Malta, Netherlands, Norway, Ireland, Sweden, Turkmenistan and the Vatican City. So these changes will come into effect July 31st, so in the next few days. So you now have roughly 31 countries and territories on Abu Dhabi's green list. So that means travellers arriving from these places to Abu Dhabi will not need to quarantine. So just a reminder on that one, if you are vaccinated arriving from a green list destination, no quarantine, PCR on arrival, and again on day 6. Unvaccinated, no quarantine, PCR on arrival, and on days 6 and 12. If you're arriving from a country not on Abu Dhabi's green list, there is quarantine, 7 days if you're vaccinated and 12 unvaccinated with relevant PCR testing as well. And if you need that full list of the countries, it is up on the Air and News Centre app.
Prashant writes in with this question, what's the status of vaccinated visitors travelling to the United Kingdom? We did have an announcement about this from the United Kingdom over the past 24, 48 hours
That's
or
right.
so, but I don't think it affects anyone in the UAE. What can you tell us, Serena?
So they will allow fully vaccinated travellers from the United States and European Union to arrive without needing to quarantine. This is from August 2nd, so Monday next week. It was the Transport Minister, Grant Shapps, who made the announcement yesterday. He said the changes would apply to those with a US or European accepted vaccine. So just a reminder on that one, with EU-approved vaccines, you've got Comirnaty, you've got Moderna, AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson. UK currently administering Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But again, it is for US or European accepted vaccines. Arrivals still need to do the usual pre-departure test, take a PCR on day 2 of returning to England. They've also given the green light for international cruises to start again as well. So this will also begin from Monday next week. It's been about 16 months since they've been suspended.
But just to clarify, when they say American from America, you can go to the UK, that doesn't mean Americans living here. I'm thinking, for example, about our colleagues Pretty Malik and Brent Black, who are currently, as we speak, doing the breakfast show on Virgin Radio. Proud Americans, American passport holders. They can't go to the UK from the UAE.
It's currently, the UAE is still on the red list for England at the moment. But yeah, this is literally if anyone was travelling from the United States and within the European Union as well.
Right then. Let's talk about cases and vaccines here in the UAE. The numbers, please.
So over the last few days, actually this time last week, you were looking at figures of 1,506. Last night, they announced 1,527 new cases. That's after more than 305,800 tests were conducted. That has been the highest since we've had since over a month now. Active cases up slightly from 20,615. We're currently at 20,642. Also 5 fatalities. So total deaths in the country, 1,934. And you also had 1,495 recoveries announced yesterday as well.
On the subject of vaccines, we've heard overnight from the boss of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, about the efficacy of that vaccine. And he says in the first couple of months, the efficacy is close to 100% in preventing hospitalisation and very serious illness. But he does say evidence from Israel in particular suggests that it does wane. After 6 months, the efficacy in preventing hospitalisation and serious illness is about 84%. And he says we might need a booster jab sometime soon. This is him speaking on CNBC.
There is a waning of the efficacy, as you noticed. We just printed today the data from our main study that was from the original virus, not the Delta variant. And it was, the first 2 months was 97%, the second 2 months was 90% approximately, and the 4 to 6 months was approximately 84. We have seen also data from Israel, but there is a waning of immunity. And that starts impacting what used to be 100% against hospitalization. Now, at the 6 months period, is becoming low 90s, mid to high 80s. But the good news is that we are very, very confident that a third dose, a booster, will take up the immune response to levels that will be enough to protect against the Delta variant.
It's the voice of Albert Bourla of Pfizer. I'm just looking at his background. He's a Greek guy. Do you know what his background is?
No.
He's a vet.
What?
He earned a doctorate in biotechnology at Aristotle University of Thessaloniki's Veterinary School.
Well, it just makes me think of Russia. They actually came out with a vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine for animals.
They did, because I remember you did the story on April the 1st, and I thought it was an April Fool.
Yeah, that's right. But no, it's interesting about the comments regarding Pfizer and the booster shot, because it is something that generally has been the message from the WHO for several months. I mean, last year it was all about getting a vaccine. We now have the vaccine. This year it's all about whether the requirement of a booster shot and supplementary shots will be required. So, and that's pretty much been the consensus, saying looking at studies and waiting for more results. They just want to be safe. And then, because you already have the Sinopharm booster option here in the UAE as well.
Quick update on the Olympics. What can you tell us, Serena Kelly? Because you're on top of it, aren't you? Especially the UAE athletes.
I'm just bringing up the tally table of Olympic medals at the moment. China's leading with a total of 29, 14 gold. United States of America, 36 total with 13 gold. And Japan in third with a total of 22, 13 of those gold as well. And of course, we had the UAE's Ivan Romarenko. He lost the men's judo 100 kilogram weight class this morning to Shady Elanas from Canada. And it's only been 6 days in, but you've already had athletes starting to return home because it's part of the strict COVID-19 measures in Japan. No extended stays are allowed. The guidelines state athletes must arrive no earlier than 5 days before their competition starts and fly back within 48 hours of completing their sports. And you had the Philippines weightlifter Hidalyn Diaz. She's already back in the Philippines.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Aaron News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on Dubai AI1038.com.
Let's talk aviation now. One of our top stories this morning is that Etihad Airways is launching IATA's health travel app on 7 routes. That's as part of a trial with the industry body. The travel pass will be used on Etihad's flights, including Bangkok, Milan and New York. Going to cross live to Abu Dhabi in a couple of moments' time to get their perspective from Etihad headquarters. First of all, though, the perspective from IATA, the International Air Transport Association. Kashif Khalid is the regional director, and we asked him why this initiative is important.
Essentially, Travel Pass is a one-stop shop platform for managing all of your COVID-19 documentation. So for passengers, it provides information as to the type of test or vaccination certificate they require, where they can go to get tested. Automatically, the test results from their PCR or rapid antigen are unloaded onto their mobile phone. So when they show up to the airport, all of their facilitation needs are provided just simply by showing the IATA Travel Pass application. We firmly believe that with its ease of use as well as data security, it'll be adopted and more airlines around the world will drive adoption of IATA Travel Pass.
Joining us to tell us how it will work from Etihad's perspective is the Innovation Lead for Digital Technology and Innovation at Etihad Aviation Group, Kai Ling Ting. Good morning, Kai.
Good morning.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us this morning. So Kashif there from IATA, who I'm sure you've worked with, gave us the nuts and bolts of how it's going to work. But tell us why you're doing this at Etihad. What problem is this solving?
I think as travelers ourselves, we've now experienced that since the start of the pandemic, traveling has been less relaxing. It's a lot more stressful. You're troubled about what kind of documents you need to carry. There's so many different type of tests that you need to do as well. And we find that the IATA Travel Pass helps make the travel journey a little more seamless. It provides our guests with the ability to, like Kashif said, securely share the health documentation with Etihad and with any border control authorities. It also allows them to know ahead of time that they've got the right documents and that, you know, they've got the okay to travel. So it creates that assurance.
So let's say I'm taking one of your flights to Bangkok, is one of the destinations, isn't it, in a couple of weeks' time. Talk me through how that's going to work, not just when I'm checking into the flight and when I'm on the flight and when I'm arriving in Bangkok, but also in the days beforehand when I'm getting my PCR test or my vaccination certificate or whatever it may be. Talk me through that process.
So you would download the IATA Travel Pass, depending on whether you have an iPhone or an Android phone, you download it from the respective app store. Before your trip, you would just make sure that you link the IATA Travel Pass to your passport. So create a digital identity on the pass itself. And ahead of your travel, visit one of our partner labs here in Abu Dhabi or in Dubai. Tell them that you're using the IATA Travel Pass so you can link your details and securely share your details with the lab. Conduct your PCR test. Your PCR results will be received directly on the IATA Travel Pass. And it would then give you an update on whether or not you're good to go from a health perspective. On the day of your travel, just arrive at the airport, show it to our staff, and you're good to go.
So that's when it comes to PCR tests. What about my vaccination certificate?
So at this moment, the vaccine certificate is not required for travel on Etihad's flights unless it's required for the destination. So currently, we do not require that for the routes that we're trialing the pass on. However, I think IATA is constantly working on evolving the app as well. Currently, you're able to upload your vaccine certificate if it's taken from Singapore, Qatar, or any of the EU DCC certificates. So hopefully very soon you'll be able to upload your vaccine certificate from the UAE as well.
Okay, that could be stage two. Yeah. And how do we know that the person at the airport that I'm landing at understands what an IATA travel pass is? Because it's very challenging for people who work in airports around the world. Some people are turning up with bits of paper. Some people are turning up waving their phones around with a screenshot of a pass. There's hundreds of people arriving off a large Etihad flight, one of your Boeing or Airbus flights. The person at the other end, how do we know they're going to understand how to use the IATA travel pass?
And that's the beauty of the pass, right? There isn't really so much to do on the other end. It's very clear that, you know, this is the passenger that you're seeing, and it is, they've got the okay to travel, and if required, they can actually click through to see the details of the health credentials. And we're leaning very much on IATA colleagues to help with advocacy around the world to make sure that immigration authorities and border control authorities are acknowledging the IATA travel pass as well. From Etihad's perspective, we're working very closely with our global airports to make sure that our airport operations teams are aware that we're trialling and using the IATA travel pass.
So, seven destinations, and they're important destinations. We mentioned some of them. New York is one of them, Milan, Bangkok, Singapore as well. Big destinations. But when can we see this being rolled out across the Etihad network? And I'm thinking not so much of these A-list, grade A international airports, but some of the B and C tier cities that you and other airlines fly to.
Trust me, we're working really, really hard on the expansion. We're working very closely with IATA. As and when more lab networks open across the net, across the IATA travel pass as well, then that's when we can start expanding the acceptance of the pass. We do want to make sure that when we say that it's available in a certain city, there are sufficient labs that our guests can go to. That's the main decision factor right now.
Because I'm thinking back to 10 days ago when I was getting my PCR test in Montenegro to get my flight back from there. I mean, it was fine and it worked well enough. But the idea that the IATA would have to go to a small little lab in an obscure town in Montenegro and figure out how to link their system with IATA's system, that is a logistical challenge, isn't it?
It really is. And that's why IATA is partnering with lab networks around the world, but at the same time also partnering with government health authorities. So, for instance, in Singapore right now, they've already partnered with the Ministry of Health so that any PCR certificate can actually be recognized onto the IATA travel pass as long as it's from an accredited lab within Singapore. And I believe they're continuing to do this collaboration across health authorities around the world.
Finally, your job title says Innovation Lead for Digital Technology and Innovation. This is your latest initiative. What else have you got up your sleeves at Etihad's Innovation Lab over the next few months or so? What can you tell us? I'm sure there's a lot you can't, but what can you tell us?
I think as with most people, our life's been completely overtaken by the pandemic in the last two plus years. So a lot of our initiatives have been around focusing on how we can support our guests as well as our airport staff when it comes to helping travel resume to the days that we pre-pandemic. So we've launched the IATA Travel Pass. We've worked on a product called Verified to Fly, which is now available across all of our network. And we continue to evolve both of these products to make sure that our guests are able to maximize the benefit of the items that we roll out.
It's important work. We're going to let you get back to it now. Thanks very much indeed for joining us, Kai Ling Ting, with Etihad Aviation Group on the rollout of the IATA travel pass to seven more of their destinations. It seems to be the way the wind is blowing, Tom, isn't it, that we are going to have some kind of app. At the moment, it's just tests, not vaccination certificates. But she said IATA is working on the vaccination bit.
Yeah, and the point you made earlier, I think, is very valid. You know, when IATA say we stand up and listen because it is an internationally recognised body, much like WHO, and WHO taking the lead on certain vaccines and approvals, etc. Hopefully we can get some sort of parity that carries water or vaccines the world over with approvals therein. Because at the moment there just seems to be, well, as you said, also, you are literally checking so many different sources to see what's what and what's not.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Where this morning we turn our attention to the mortgage side of the real estate market. Who better to speak to than senior mortgage consultant at Mortgage Finder, Ian Vaughan. Morning, Ian.
Good morning, Richard.
Good to have you with us, joining us on Microsoft Teams. If you're watching on TV, you can watch Ian. So here's the good news when it comes to mortgages. Almost doubling in the first half of this year. How so?
It's good news all round, Richard, in my opinion. Now, when the pandemic really kicked in and we were in the grip of lockdown, one of the debates internally surrounded the type of economic recovery that we would see. Would it be U-shaped, L-shaped or V-shaped? If we look at the data and charts today, the categorical answer is up and to the right. Now, when we compare the recently released market statistics, we see that 63% of all sales transactions were in the secondary or ready market, showing a year-on-year increase of 40%. Accordingly, with the remainder of those sales occurring within the off-plan sector. The total number of transactions over this period reaching just over 27,000 and culminating in a staggering 61.97 billion dirhams changing hands. Absolutely unbelievable. In terms of mortgage transactions, 40% of those sales were completed through home finance, where there was an almost 50-50 split between mortgages for villas and townhouses compared to apartments. Actually, the split was 55% for villas and townhouses.
And that's interesting, Ian, but if I can just jump in there, you say the split was like 50-50 between villas and apartments, but if we look at the stock of real estate in Dubai, the split would be much more heavily weighted towards apartments. So within the mortgage market, it seems like what you're saying is that a disproportionate bias towards townhouses and villas.
Possibly so. I think when we look at apartments, for example, there are a lot more sort of investors with cash funds to be able to purchase them. But we have seen since lockdown has been lifted, a more sort of sway towards people wanting their own open spaces, as it were.
Well, let's talk about the role of interest rates in all of this, because I know you've been looking at it closely. They are at a seven-year low. Last night, in the United States, the head of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, kept them on hold. Perhaps no surprises there. I'm going to ask you about interest rates in a second. But first of all, have a listen to Jay Powell speaking last night. The one threat to those low interest rates that the real estate market is enjoying is inflation. If inflation rises, interest rates may have to rise with it. But from what Jerome Powell says, that threat may be distant.
The process of reopening the economy is unprecedented, as was the shutdown at the onset of the pandemic. As the reopening continues, bottlenecks, hiring difficulties, and other constraints could continue to limit how quickly supply can adjust, raising the possibility that inflation could turn out to be higher and more persistent than we expect. These bottleneck effects have been larger than anticipated, but as these transitory supply effects abate, inflation is expected to drop back toward our longer-run goal.
And inflation drops back, then interest rates, the market analysts are saying, should stay lower for longer. Just how important is that, Ian, to the mortgage market here in Dubai?
It is extremely important. As we are probably all aware, the IBOR rates here are very, very closely aligned to the US Fed rate.
Just very quickly, got to pick you up on IBOR there. Just remind us what IBOR is.
It's the Emirates Interbanking Offer Rate, which is controlled by the UAE Central Bank. And as I mentioned there, the IBOR rates here, where banks align themselves to either 1 month, 3 months, or 6 month IBOR, it's important for IBOR rates here to remain low and according to the US Fed rates.
So, in terms of what happens next for the mortgage market, the first half of this year has been great. What about the second half of this year? A lot of the chatter that we hear is that the activity is in the very, very luxury end of the market. Are people who are buying these 20, 30, 40, even 100 million dirham villas on the palm, are they taking out mortgages to buy those? Or is it more the mid-market where the mortgage action is?
It's a very good question. The high-end villas are probably being purchased by cash-rich people who are looking to relocate to Dubai. The more sort of mid-market section is where it's at, really, for mortgages.
Appreciate your time this morning, Ian. Thanks very much indeed. Can't let you go without asking this question. How do we get the best deal on the mortgage? Lots of banks offering mortgages, broadly similar interest rates, but there are subtle nuances between them. 30 seconds tip on how to find the best one.
Yes, banks are open for business, although some sectors are being vetoed by some lenders. There's a lot of competition between major high street banks to grab a slice of the action, with one or two offering incredibly client-friendly products. Best solution for clients is to speak with an independent mortgage advisor that has whole-of-market options available.
Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning. Really appreciate it. Ian Vaughan is a senior mortgage consultant with Mortgage Finder. A doubling of mortgages in the Dubai real estate market over the past 6 months or so.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk Expo 2020. You went under the big clock countdown thing yesterday. How many days?
Yesterday it was 66 days to go.
Okay, so call it 65 today or something like that.
You're good.
Ain't long to go. That's all I can say. Once everyone's got back from their summer holidays and otherwise, and plenty to look forward to when the world's greatest show comes to town. World of firsts as well, because Expo 2020 will see the world's first African food hall established. It's going to launch at Expo 2020. It's going to feature 20 internationally renowned chefs, and it's being led and organised and cajoled by a true tour de force, a force of nature of the culinary world. Zagat called him one of New York City's restaurant power players you need to know. He's the recipient of the James Beard Award for one of three cookbooks, awarded for Between Harlem and Heaven, Afro-Asian American Cooking for Big Nights, Weeknights and Every Day. He is much more than that. He is an individual who has a vision to put African cuisine on the map. He's a chef, he's an author, he's a raconteur, he's a restaurateur, he's a TV personality. If that weren't enough, he's also a classically trained musician, a professional opera singer, and the winner and recipient of a Grammy Award and Tony Award for his part in this. That's the cast recording of Porgy and Bess by George Gershwin. And part of that was, of course, the inimitable, the one, the only, Chef Alexander Smalls, who joins us live on the line and live on Microsoft Teams. Chef, good morning.
Good morning. I could really just sit and listen to you talk about me.
Well, judging by achievements, Chef, I think we could do that pretty much for the next 3 hours or so. Listen, it's wonderful to have you here in Dubai. How's the trip been?
Thank you. I've been having a great time. So excited about being here preparing for Expo 2020 and excited to bring Al Kabulan to the world.
Listen, for the past 3 decades, among the many achievements that you have to your name, you have been traveling the world, studying the cooking techniques and the food ways of the African diaspora. Is it a cuisine that is wholly and globally misunderstood, do you think?
Well, yes, but also by design. I mean, essentially, this is the food of the motherland, but it has been translated on 5 continents through enslaved people who essentially were the labor force, who cooked, cleaned, brought their cooking recipes, techniques, essentially to 5 of our 7 continents. And so it is really time for Africa and African food to have its day. So we're excited to be the people who are bringing it to you.
We are the business breakfast, and obviously Expo 2020 is a bridging of cultures, of heritages, but it's also a bringing together of business leaders. Is there an untapped potential, do you think, in terms of import and export when it comes to African cuisine?
Without question. I mean, first and foremost, you have African chefs right now working in some of the finest kitchens all over the world. What African chefs have done at this point is really invested their culinary experience and expertise into bringing African food into the modern contemporary landscape. And Al Kabulan will give you an example of what that really is all about. So it is viable any and everywhere. And many times people are already eating it and don't know.
Exactly that. So give us an idea. Paint us a picture, if you can, with all the colours in your palette at the moment, of what the world's first African food hall is going to look like, to smell like, and suppose, most importantly, taste like.
Well, you know, I'm very excited because we've had tremendous support from Expo 2020 with respect to creating a container, a platform to showcase this cuisine, you will find the setting to be of museum quality. Some of the most extraordinary art pieces from all over Africa will be displayed, installations. African food is just not, you know, flavor and taste. It's also sights and sounds. It's also smells. It's also about the culture and about the music. We bring all of that together with renowned chefs from all over Africa who will be contributing to what we feel is going to be quite a landscape of interesting cuisine. Most people just simply can't imagine that this is African food. So we're excited.
Is there one dish that represents the continent of Africa as a whole for you, or is that an impossible question?
Well, it is a challenging question. I can tell you that being born in South Carolina, in the Gullah region, where essentially the West African influence on American and African-American kitchen is enormous. You know, you're looking at, ingredients. You're looking at the rice. You're looking at the okra, peppers, peanuts. You're looking at the cooking techniques of stews and grilling, a concept of fired meats. I would have to say that what most resounds for me as African food, probably is gumbo, which means okra in the African language, but it is a fitting stew of seafood and, some meats. And served over rice. Rice is really the centerpiece of African food. So, you're going to find that and so much more. And then we're going to take you on the journey of modern, what chefs are doing to take traditional recipes and bring them into the contemporary conversation.
Chef, you alluded to the import-export potentials that will also be highlighted at Expo 2020 as well. With that in mind, and given the fact that you and I are sat here in Dubai talking about an event that's going to take place in Dubai, could the UAE, could Dubai become something of a stepping stone for that business to help promote African cuisine around the world?
Oh, my. Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, the opportunity that Dubai and the Expo has given us to create the first modern contemporary food experience. That's invaluable. That is huge. And I have no question that this is the beginning of a movement in a big way. So, stay tuned.
I mentioned also in the build-up to this one that you are not alone in this voyage. Upwards of 20 chefs coming together under your tutelage as well. Are they being plucked from all corners of the globe?
Yes. Mainly in Africa, the foundation of the food hall, really, aside from myself, are African chefs, from South Africa, East Africa, West Africa. And then we are bringing in, as guest chefs, some of the sort of more global African chefs, African-American chefs, who are really having this conversation in faraway parts, such as New York, LA, Savannah, Georgia. So we are continuing the conversation and showing some of the threads of the transatlantic slave trade, essentially where African food ended up and how it has thrived.
Cannot wait. You have whet the appetite in more ways than one. Great to have Chef Alexander Smalls joining us live on the line there. He is, of course, the author of Between Harlem and Heaven, Afro-Asian American Cooking for Big Nights, Weeknights, and Every Day. That's just one of three books that he has authored. He's also going to be the man behind the world's first African food hall at Expo 2020. Larger than life.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.